This is Also Cool Sounds Like. I'm Alejandra Melian. We are living in a complicated time for bodies. Every time we leave our houses, we protect ourselves from a sickness that threatens to enter us and end our lives, that threatens to take our bodies away from us. We are simultaneously extremely conscious of our bodies and removed from them, untouched by friends, our social interactions confined to disembodied screens. When this episode comes out, Montreal will have recently been put under another 8 p.m. curfew. The government has decided that they should restrict the movement of our bodies during our free time, while continuing to exploit our bodies during the hours the capitalist clock is running. Eli Tarek El-Beshelani Lynch's book, Not Body, came out in October of 2020, the era, in my conceptualization of COVID time, that we were all settling into the strange reality, accepting that we were in it for the long haul. Not Body is not about COVID, though, obviously. Because although this moment might have brought our relationships to our bodies front and center for everyone, for many people, the body and one's relationship to it has always been complicated. A relationship best explored emotively, effectively, like Eli does in their book.
Holding the body. Those who cannot forget the past are destined to remix it. Evie Shockley, The New Black. This is the way I wash my body, wash my body, wash my body. This is the way I wash my body of everything but tender thoughts. Investigating, does this feel good? Does this feel good? Does this? The way I'm always on stage, you're all looking at my body out back and off the stage, laid open, and oh, the little lilacs coming out, striking, but still feeling that lack. How often I'm left ajar, open and seamless, an invitation fraying at the joints. Like those pants bulging, growing, my dad screams, thunder thighs! Across the room, my dad weighs less than me, holding my body locked in. Patch those thighs from chub rub. But that chub will keep on rubbing, and those pants will keep on breaking, and you will never be held tightly for long. Where did I go wrong? This is the way I wash my body, wash my body, wash my body. This is the way I wash my body of starving on a diet. How tragic to be such a slender thread of a person. How tragic to give up carbs when bread tastes so good. Remember, fat equals good, fat equals good, fat equals good, fat equals God. Don't try that diet shit on me. Don't try that shame shit on me. Get out of my house. Yeah, I said it. How dare I be so bold? Thunder thighs. Yeah, I said it. How dare I be so bold? A body, a body, a body. Do you believe in animosity? Do you believe in heaven for the next generation? Fat, thickened, laid out like a prize to be won. This is the way I wash my body, wash my body, wash my body. This is the way I wash my body of knots, knots, knot. I am a knot of what you think. How tragic to be so cemented in sex or a gendered sext. The body so bold and free, starting to fray along the seams, edges, a ridge of empathy. But tell me really, is anyone cis these days? This is the way I sometimes feel like a girl, strike when you touch me, but only when you touch me. But I don't tell you, and I don't know you, show you my body. But isn't that the truth, and isn't that a mess, and you saying a woman, ladies, won't get me down the way you want it to. What, not a woman? Yeah, that's the truth. And what, not a man? Oh, yeah, that's true too. Like, is that even real? Guess I'm the proof, the truth, just part of the equation. This is the way I wash my body, wash my body, wash my body. This is the way I wash my body of everyday knots. Pulling pieces apart to distance them from me. Them, 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 them. But still pretty. This is the way I hold it close, them and me. Leaking out of my body just for me. This is the way I wash my body, wash my body, wash my body. This is the way I wash my body of thickening knots. She asks you, does it hurt? Your voice cracking and changing, constantly on the move up and down your throat. Your vocal cords changing, growing 20 times their size, the Grinch's heart. You are thickening, lengthening, the larynx testosterone heavy. Yeah, baby. We like them thick. Yeah, we said it. Yeah, baby. And a rip, rip, rip of my chest, a deep gash red, left to heal, pieces of me plucked out. Do I need to spell it out? This body transmorphing, fat lumps of chest. Where do they go? Pieces of me lying dead in an emesis basin, kidney-shaped and sterile, served on a platter. Can we eat you like the placenta? Is this how I give life? Oh, you. It's like I never knew you. Left in a plastic bin, marked hazardous, waste of space. But I think I might have known you. Why do you look so familiar? Damn, do we go to high school together?
Eli explores their relationship to their body from many angles. There are the identities embedded within them, rooted in ethnicity, race, transness, and queerness, but also their relationship to pain and their experience with fibromyalgia, which is a disorder with the prominent feature of musculoskeletal pain. There is no cure for fibro, and researchers aren't entirely sure what causes it, though many believe that repeated nerve stimulation causes the brain and spinal cord to change.
So, like, the big thing for me for learning that I had fibro was going to a friend who's a massage therapist, and this person also has fibro. And when they were massaging me, there were, like, obviously certain indicators where they were like, what's going on with you? And, like, I would, like, talk about, like, oh, I have, like, low levels of pain. And they were like, well, it sounds like you have pain all the time. And I was like, well, maybe. And, like, just having these conversations where I was like, wait a second. And, you know, it's helpful when you have someone else point something out without being, like, abrupt, you know. They weren't like, you have this and this is what's going on with you. They kind of were just, like, teasing out some questions or teasing out some answers, rather. And, like, asking me questions. And it was nice because it was something that I was doing to make my body feel better. And so it was the right moment for that. And so I feel like that was the first stage of coming back to my body, being like, oh, okay, yeah, all these signs and, like, all these things that, like, I never related to each other actually mean this thing. And at first that was really scary. Like, I think sometimes the answers aren't always the easiest to hear, but at least with regards to fibro, it became helpful to know that I had it, because then I could, like, move forward and figure out ways of feeling better. I think in the same way, if we think about trauma, I feel like it sort of works in the same way. You kind of have to get at the root of it, or you have to, like, investigate trauma a bit. And, you know, ideally you're not going in full on, because that's pretty harmful for people, but going in, like, a little bit and, like, peeking in and, like, checking that out and, like, doing things like therapy, whether it's, like, somatic therapy or talk therapy or different kinds of therapies. You know, it could be exercise, it could be swimming, it could be singing, like, anything that, you know, reminds you that you have a body and that your body needs to be remembered, I guess. Like, different kinds of, like, mostly physical activity, I would say. Like, not necessarily physical activity, like going to the gym, but just any activity where you use your body, that has been helpful for me to come back to it. Especially, like, as a writer, I'm, like, in my head so much. And, like, as a person who deals with anxiety, like, I'm in there a lot. So finding ways to, like, come out and be like, I'm not just a brain, which I think I thought of myself, like, for so long as a kid. I was like, yeah, like, I know, like, I knew this about myself. I'm like, I'm a thinker. I think a lot. I'm in my brain, like I was good at school. People would praise me for that. I was like, this is what I know about myself, right? And then being like, wait, actually, there's like so much else. There's a body and it needs also to be cared for. I think, yeah, a bunch of stuff like reminded me to come back. And that was both harder because, yeah, you know, like then I'm aware of my pain. But it was also, it's also been really good in terms of like being more in tune with myself, knowing my boundaries better, knowing how to communicate better, knowing like what to ask from people, learning how to ask for help, you know, all these things I think were really important as like a way to come back to my body, but also as a result of coming back to my body. I think for me, like when I was thinking through the idea of the not body, I was also thinking about bodies that aren't deemed like normative, like bodies that are marginalized, bodies that are seen as other, and how the play on like not with a K and not with an N. And so part of it was that like someone who is seen as not a body, who's seen as not a person, but also like a knot of things, you know? So it's like this multiple idea of the knot. As both things, as like something that isn't and also something that very much is, which I never thought about it till now, but I'm like, oh, it's kind of like fibro. Like it's a real thing that's really based in the body, but we can't really figure out what the source is or like where it really lies in the body. And so it's like, it is a knot that's like really holding on to you, but it's also not really a thing. It's hard to write about in ways that don't feel enumerative. Like there's like a section in the book, I have it here. I say like, I'm desperate for a larger vocabulary to talk about my pain, and I kind of start listing words. And I think that section was the like more straightforward talking about pain. And I think that felt important to me, kind of, obviously I want to write in a poetic, lyrical way. Like that's something that is present in my work. But I also was thinking about the opposite of like, just like declaring, being very declarative and talking about pain, like not mincing words, kind of being more forward with it and kind of playing with that tension of metaphor and lyricism and more direct address. Yeah, it was like such a hard thing to be writing about. Like I said, like when you start thinking about pain, it makes itself more apparent, you know? And so much of the ways that your like our bodies deal with pain is by using tactics like disassociating or numbing or different things like this in order to cope with, you know, living on, like on a daily basis and moving through the world and trying to do the shit that you got to get done, you know? And so it was a pretty hard experience to be like, okay, I'm going to sit down and think about this and talk about this and then at the same time be physically experiencing it. But I think becoming more aware of chronic pain and fibro and finding words and language to talk about it has made it easier to talk about, in the sense that I think because fibro particularly, like I think talking about bodies and pain is hard, and then talking about fibro that has so much unknown is even harder. So I think doing research and figuring out what's going on with myself and, you know, I mean, like doing therapy has been helpful for me in that sense. Reading books like, you know, The Body Keeps the Score, which talks about trauma and bodies. And this other book called Brilliant Imperfection by this writer named Eli Clare that writes about disability. And there are sections of his book where he writes about chronic pain and fibro are really useful, like as like grounding tools. Both of those are books of theory. And they're fairly conversational, I would say, but they're still, you know, trying to explain a thing. And so I was like, that's not what I want this book to do. I want this book to be informative and I want people to be able to learn from this book, but I also want it to be poetic and lyrical and use metaphor and sound and form in order to, you know, create an experience.
Dear friends, lovers, and in-betweens, standing in front of a pool of hot water, my body is ready for disassociation that never comes. What a pleasant surprise. I remember the times my hands overheated so much in the low dish sink at work, all wet and wrinkly, my body feeling elsewhere, the heat rising in me, my feet no longer connected to my body. You tell me, we must first jump into the hot, then the cold, but we mustn't scream. We wince, going into the cold pool, while this older lady toughs it out, starts doing the breaststroke. We breathe deeply to remind ourselves our bodies are not being attacked, but I still jump out of the pool before you, not wanting the cold water to touch my junk. Bessel van der Kolk is in the hands of every queer on the queerest bus in Montreal. The 80 houses them all, reading about trauma and boasting their somatic knowledge. I ask Bessel what it means that I don't fight or flight, and he tells me, freeze is most effective for you. I laugh because it's the winter in Montreal, so we are all frozen, but Bessel doesn't get the joke. He is hard to make laugh, so I try harder, telling him that I forgot a memory, but it came back so suddenly that it smacked me right back into bed. My knees start hurting when I walk upstairs. My back hurts when I lean in too much. Bessel asks me why I think pain is funny, and I don't have an answer. Would my life be less fun if I didn't laugh when my wrists start feeling like those of a person with osteoarthritis? I haven't lived long enough for my bones to wear down over time. Bessel has no humor, but I decide not to ditch him. I tell Bessel, I'm only 25. You gotta think it's funny that I feel 80. Bessel thinks it's sad, and this is when I ditch him. Coke in Dutch means pond, depth, abyss, chasm, and vortex. I think Bessel might be too deep for me. XOXO, Eli.
I had asked Eli about writing about the body because, to me, translating the physical into words has always been difficult. What I gleaned from their explanation was that approaching the body with words requires exploring it from many angles. In Not Body, they combine poetry, letters, and essay, and I think that bringing all these forms together, letting the particularities and the nuances that each form allows for to combine under one cover, made using words to communicate what is felt possible.
What I have discovered for myself is that I really like writing book-length projects, so having kind of an overarching theme or narrative or question that I'm asking. And I think for me, when I start from that point, it gives me a lot of freedom to kind of work through my ideas, and it makes it less so that each poem feels like it has to be specifically about something, but rather all of the poems are kind of working together to be about an overarching theme or an overarching idea or question. So it gives me, I think, the space to breathe a bit while writing individual poems. I mean, lately I've been using other poetry to help inspire me to kind of like work with rhythm or sound or like a feeling that I really like in another poem, and then I'll write off of that. And so often, I think the best poems for me are the ones where I'm not, like, I need to write a poem about French fries, you know, and then like trying to go and like write that French fry poem, it's gonna come out really bad and like overthought or like too obvious, I would say. So yeah, having the space to not, you know, directly write about something specific in that moment gives me the space to let the emotion and the sound and the lyricism kind of work its way through. And eventually, of course, like, because I'm thinking about these concepts and these ideas so much, they're going to come out in my poetry anyways. But I can't go at it like straight on. I think it started as a way for myself to like learn about my body, but I think unknowingly. So I was writing all these poems. I wrote a poem called Not Body, which is not the poem that's in this book. It was like a different poem called Not Body. And I had this language, like I had the word not body to talk about my body. And like all the ways that, whether it was like pain or anxiety or all these things, a way to like explain what was going on. I wrote this poem and it popped into my head, this word and this like way of describing it. And I kept like writing to this poem, you know, and writing like things that expanded on this poem. So like several other poems, there was like a Not Body part two. There was a Not Body that had like some kind of like sous-titre or like subtitle. And this like idea of the Not Body was like really churning in my head. All of this before I even like really thought about fibro or any kind of chronic pain. And so I was writing all these poems and writing many, many different things, I think, none of which kind of fit, I would say, as a full collection. Like, they were all like tidbits and like different ways I used to like work through what was going on and like learning how to write poetry. Then more recently, when I first started writing Not Body, I kind of more so set out to write a book about fibro and a book that explored what fibro looks like for trans people and for people who are not cis white women, because often that's who we think has fibro, and that's who we like, that's who many doctors believe about having fibro, though doctors still don't believe women about fibro. So it's like a, you know, there's like a tension, obviously. Like, A, women aren't believed about having things, but then as soon as you become more marginalized or not a woman, like men as well, you're also not believed. So there's all these like different tiers. But I had read this book called Tender Points by Amy Berkowitz. And it was the first book I read about fibro. And when I first read it in 2016, 2017, I can't remember. I think I read it the year it came out. I like really loved it and I found it really important, though I like didn't fully relate it to myself. And then more recently when I was starting to think about writing Not Body, I like revisited the book and I was like, I don't know about this, and kind of, you know, like felt more complicated about it. I still think it's like an important book and I'm glad she wrote it, but I think for me, I was like, I want to complicate the idea more. I feel like she started looking at an idea but really stopped somewhere, and I thought that I wanted to move further than that. So I think at that point I was like, I want to write about chronic pain and fibro so more people can know about it and more people can maybe figure out that they have it, you know?
Even though I don't experience chronic illness, reading Eli's poems helped me to reflect on my own relationship to my body. Having struggled with an eating disorder as a teenager, let's be honest, a struggle that never truly goes away, and fluctuating between love for my body and constant resentment to it, it's powerful to read words so carefully chosen to describe the complexity of such a relationship. But existing within the identities that I do, my body is privileged with a certain safety and a certain validation. Not Body is able to dig into what it means when your own relationship to your body is complicated even further by external forces. Eli's book doesn't shy away from the transphobia, racism, and other oppressions that they've dealt with, or the way that their experiences have shaped their identity. But they approach it all with joyfulness and a sense of humor that softens the burden of thinking with these difficult topics.
Writing for me is like a thinking process. So I feel like it's been changing a lot. But I guess when it comes to like how I see identity for myself, it's definitely like there are the ways that are like I'm an like mixed Arab. I'm also like I have a white parent. I'm a poet. I'm a writer. Like I'm trans and queer in those like categorical ways. But I guess I'm like trying to think about identity outside of that a bit, instead of like feeling like always a box, you know? But I haven't figured it out yet, you know? Still trying to think through it. So growing up, because I moved around a lot, I became really good at making new friends. I got really good at picking up and leaving things behind. And this was like pre-internet, right? So when I moved here from Lebanon, if I wanted to call my friends, it was like on a calling card and they were expensive and I'm not gonna, like, you know, I didn't have access to them. We'd mostly use them to talk to my family there, you know, once a month or something. I kind of had to get used to moving and get used to picking up and letting go and restarting. And because it started when I was quite young, it almost became my normal. And so when we landed in Cornwall, and that's kind of before Montreal was the place that I had lived the longest, which I think it was 6 years. I was a bit confused about how to situate myself, you know, kind of being like, oh, I'm supposed to sort of maybe build connections and like grow roots or whatever, and like, you know, might be here for a bit. And that was kind of confusing for me, trying to figure that out. And so I think even there, I like kind of moved through a lot of friendships because I was used to doing that. And I think being in Montreal for so long and kind of deciding to stick around has allowed me to like move to a place where I can create like a more grounded idea of home, a more grounded idea of community and friendship and family. And But it's definitely, yeah, influenced so much of the way I like move through the world, and maybe my social ease, I think, is part of that. Helps to be a poet who has social ease, because I think there's a lot of poets who are quite socially anxious. And I think people sometimes relate to my work because I'm like able to offer it up in a way that's kind of open, I would say, which I like feel grateful for having that skill, I guess, because I do like to connect with people through my work. Like, it's really important to me. I've always been a bit stubborn and a bit like a, like when I was a kid, I really liked to be the boss and like to be the leader. And I'd like get all the kids to like play the games that like I decided on. And I was like the second oldest of all my cousins. So when I was in Lebanon, like I was just like the leader of all the cousins, you know? So I think having that kind of personality really like, and like maybe a bit of a confidence or something, or like a confidence in certain aspects of myself that helped me maintain a sense of self through movement, you know? Like I think there were certain things that I was like confident I knew about myself, and obviously things change all the time. And, you know, I know that from like even when I moved here from Montreal at 17, and now I'm 26, like things have drastically changed. But I think there is like bossy know-it-all essence that I still have from when I was a kid. I don't know. I think like moving a lot, it just kind of forces you to figure out who you are, because when you're moving so much and everything is changing, it's helpful to have yourself, like a knowledge of yourself, I think, like figuring out who you are and being able to like move with that.
Listening to Eli talk about moving around the world and the ways in which they were able to maintain a sense of self got me thinking about the constants. Perhaps the most constant thing is really the body. It changes every day, of course, but no matter where we go, it comes with us. The relationships we have to ourselves and our bodies are the longest, deepest, and most nuanced relationships we ever have. Eli told me that sometimes they picture their pain as a sort of tangled ball of yarn, a literal knot made out of muscle sticking out of parts of their body. And to me, that's perfect. The way I see it, within the muscle are also knotted the other complexities of identities and experience that we internalize. Knot body both entangles and disentangles these details and truths in a way that only the words of a poet like Eli can.
Dear friends, lovers, and in-betweens, the resemblance is uncanny. Are you two related? It's just something in your dark eyes, the way you both stare. Endlessly, you're asked about your relationship, what you are to each other and what you aren't. Shame to be an in-between. The ways you can't quite articulate your proximity, your distance, the bits that feel just right. You anticipate more questions, but they never come, because there's something so alienating about the two of you together. People don't like what they can't understand. In the 80s, my mother traveled far away from home, and because she did well in English classes, she felt ready for this new adventure. But a new world is never like an old world, every intonation different, every gesture of approval or disapproval switched. The pain showed up in her arm years later, and she didn't quite understand the connection, but I told her it was there. Or is she onto something? Maybe nothing makes sense. I'm trying to fabricate meaning from nothing. I try to piece together pain and cause as though it could ever lead me to cure. When I feel less pain, it is always a relief. When I feel less depressed, I could almost bounce off the wall. It's midnight, but I still want to hang out. I text a few people, tell them it's not a booty call, I promise. We head out, climb Mount Royal, and sit around talking until the sun rises. I take several drops of CBD and lean deep into the green grass. Oh wait, had I said it was winter? Okay, wait, actually, we are in my bed again, and I take several drops of CBD and lean in deep into my cushion-topped bed. You smoke a bit outside my room because I hate the smell of it, and we joke about nothing. When you're ready to sleep and we turn off the lights, I keep talking, and you laugh, tell me to shut up. But of course you're on board and we laugh until sunrise, getting out of bed to watch it, each with a blanket over us like little body tents. As the sun rose up, you started speaking a language foreign to both of us, moving it around in your mouth gently at first, then quickly. You surprised me with the agility of your speech. What you said, I couldn't remember, but your mouth moved in such a pleasing way. Your affect blurred with this new language, some new creation of your mouth, the spit moving around, the click of your tongue against your teeth. I sat there and you talked about nothing, and we stayed that way for hours. This time is almost like that, but not quite. The sense you make is abundant. I realize I know you better with every sunrise. The irony is that this has never happened, drifting between awake and a dream, but a poem might will it into existence. I'll paint a beautiful scene, watch it gleam and shine, present the perfect sentence, and everything might be all right. It's like trying to get out of bed. If I visualize it enough, one day it'll happen. I'm getting out of bed. I am getting out of bed. I am getting out of bed. I pick my head up. I'm getting out of bed. I'm getting out of bed. I am getting out of bed. I elevate my torso. I'm getting out of bed. I'm getting out of bed. I'm getting out of bed. I swivel my legs off the bed. I'm getting out of bed. I am 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 sitting up straight. I'm getting out of bed. I am getting out of bed. I am getting out of bed. I get up. XOXO, Eli.
Eli's second book, The Good Arabs, is out in September from Metonym Press. Keep an eye out for it so we can talk about it together over coffee someday when we can go to cafes again. Also Cool Sounds Like is produced and edited by me, Alejandra Millian, in collaboration with Also Cool Magazine. Music by Oren Ratowski. Artwork by Maleka Astorga. Check out the magazine at alsocoolmag.com or on Instagram at alsocoolmag. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other cool places you like to listen.